There's an unrecognized danger of our technology. I don't suppose it's entirely unrecognized, but you know, the miracle of memory is not that we remember. The miracle of memory is that we forget.
Amen.
And that we only remember what is necessary. And because we can forget, we don't drag the past along with us, right? So we can get free of the past. Like, all you need is three sleepless nights to understand what kind of hell life would be if you couldn't dispense with the past. Because each night when you sleep, you dispense with that day. And that renews you. And so that story of descent into the depths and redemption, I mean, that's part of our natural biological rhythm. That's the descent into unconsciousness at night, into deep sleep, and then our reawakening in the morning. And that's associated with solar mythology, with the setting of the sun and the rising of the sun. All that's tangled together, but that definitely does renew us, and it enables us to start afresh in the morning. The problem with technology, is that it's becoming increasingly difficult to shed our past. And without that, you can't redeem yourself. And that is a mistake. It is a problem, because everyone makes mistakes, and everyone makes mistakes all the time. And you might ask yourself, well, why isn't it appropriate for you to be crushed by the weight of your own stupidity? You know, given that it's immense and that you make all sorts of mistakes.
Yeah, right.
Well, no one can live under those conditions. We need to be able to let go and to forget and to forgive. Forgetting and remembering are very, very sophisticated cognitive processes. So normally what we do with an experience is we reduce it to its significance. Then we remember the significance and we let go of the details. When you write fiction, you don't write down every single thing a character does or thinks. That would bore your reader to death. You write down what's significant and important about what they're experiencing and about what they do. And if you get that right, then the story's interesting. We do the same thing with our own lives. Like, we boil our lives down to the gist of the story, and then we remember that. And then we're not crushed by the weight of the detailed recollection. And that's actually a consequence of very sophisticated psychological processing, that ability to reduce and forget. So one of the things you do in therapy, for example, so if you have a memory, for example, that's more than 18 months old, for technical reasons I won't go into, and it still produces a negative emotion when it comes to mind, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, then that memory has information in it that has not yet been unpacked. So imagine the purpose of your memory is to extract wisdom from the past that you can apply to the future, so that you don't do the same stupid thing over and over, or so that you repeat things that worked well. That's the purpose of memory, not recollection as such. It's the extraction of wisdom, the lesson. Well, if you have a memory that's more than 18 months old and it's still hurting you, making you anxious, disappointed, ashamed, guilty, any of that, it means that you have not undertaken the complex process of analyzing that memory, pulling out from it the moral, and dispensing with the details.
So that's why you say in the book, you have a bad memory, it won't leave you alone. Write it out. Write it
in detail. Write it out. Everything you can remember about it.
Star Wars. There is Darth Vader all dressed in black. You know he's a bad guy the minute he walks in. Then you have the reluctant hero, Skywalker. Then you kind of have everybody else, you know, that are on the side of the Empire. Are they doing it out of fear, or do they actually believe it? You know, you're either on this side or that side, and you can't move, and nobody moves. Nobody wants to recognize, you know, they're on the wrong side. Nobody's making a case. They're just killing each other. There is a growth of the reluctant hero in all stories. There is this arc of that hero. And they something happens and they change and they become heroic. But they're not heroes. And so many people don't think that they have what it takes. They're not the hero. And the people who are standing around are looking and just following the crowd. How do you get, or what's happening to us, to where so many people are seeing what's going on? How do you get people to recognize and then have the courage to stand? You've taken a beating. Nobody wants to do that. Why is that worth it, and how do you get there?
Well, I think it's worth it because the alternative, I believe the alternative is worse. I mean, that's why I think it's worth it. It's
What's
a decision
the alternative?
That you make to stay silent when you have something to say. You know, you don't know what it is within you that requires your voice, right? Because you feel, I have something to say. It's like, well, where does that come from exactly, that feeling that you have something to say? You're disgruntled at work and you're choking on your own bile because the situation is not just in your estimation. You're dying to say something, but you won't. Well, you'll die if you don't say it. Maybe it's a death of a thousand cuts. I don't like deferred punishment. I'd rather take it now and keep the future clean, which is why I encourage people too, to have the fights now. Not to hide things in the fog for later, because they grow and metastasize. It's better to confront what you need to confront when it's small and when you have some possibility of victory. The instinct for meaning is a genuine instinct, and it underlies even our attention. It's unbelievably deep. It's the deepest thing about us. What if that meaning instinct goes wrong? It's like, yeah, what if? What if? Okay, how do you make it go wrong? Lie and see what happens. Because you'll pathologize that instinct and then you're lost. So if you understand that, there isn't anything more frightening than understanding that. Because your stability as an entity, as a soul, is dependent on your relationship with that instinct for meaning. And if you pathologize that with deceit, you will find yourself in the hands of things that you do not want to be in the hands of. Put it that way. If you tell the truth to the best of your ability, then you can trust your instincts to some degree, to the greatest degree that you're capable of. And then that can help orient you in the world properly. You can rely on your instincts if you don't pathologize the information that you're feeding yourself. So, you know, if you want to live in harmony with yourself, which you would assume to be somewhat desirable rather than right. Hellish disharmony, then don't feed yourself what's indigestible, and certainly don't warp the world around you with deceit you know to be deceitful. It's extraordinarily damaging and dangerous.
Where do you find the hope and the strength to continue to fight, or for those who are listening, to get the motivation to stand up and say what's on their mind?
People have to have a dialogue with their own conscience. Imagine that you get upset with something when you recognize an obstacle in your path, and then imagine that you need a path and that you've chosen reasonably wisely, let's say, not perfectly, but reasonably wisely. An obstacle arises, you're frustrated, disappointed, ashamed, afraid. Well, you have something to do to clear out the obstacle. You have something to say. Well, then you don't clear out the obstacle because you're afraid to speak or you're unwilling to speak. You want to defer the conflict because you hope it will go away. Well, all that'll happen is that the obstacles will pile up. But then your life will be nothing but obstacles. Well, you need to know that. You have to ask yourself if you believe that's true. If it's true, then you don't want to remain silent. Imagine too that as you remain silent, you get smaller because you're not manifesting the courage necessary to live by your own standards. And the problem gets bigger. Well, if you're not going to speak now, what makes you think you're going to be more prepared in the future? Why is that going to happen? When does that ever happen? Generally, what happens is people cave very rapidly and they apologize like mad, even if they haven't done anything wrong. And I think that's a mistake. I understand why people do it. I mean, I really do understand why people do it, but I don't think it's a good idea. If you haven't done anything, so that's the thing about the presumption of innocence. And it really is a miracle, right? Because if you think that, you know, if I accuse you, my tendency is to think that you're bad. And you might think, well, my tendency is to think that I'm good. But, you know, that isn't the tendency for most people. People have a pretty guilty conscience, almost everyone. And it does tie itself up with this idea of monstrosity that you just described. The only person for whom public opinion means nothing is a psychopath, right? The rest of us regulate ourselves by watching our impact on others. And we're doing that all the time. And generally, even if the fault is relatively trivial, I mean, we're capable of denial and all of that, but generally we take our impact on other people very seriously. And so the presumption of innocence is a very difficult thing even to apply to yourself, but it's unbelievably useful. It's like, wait a sec, you're innocent unless you're proven guilty.